this episode, we're going to talk about if you can take progesterone continuously in perimenopause. I'm Dr. Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. So this one is actually an extension question, like a second question from Victoria, which we did a couple of episodes ago. She went sent in another question a few days later. At first, I kind of we weren't going to answer it, but I sort of read it again. It seems like a nice little discussion, sort of a random question, whatever. So I thought we would I thought we'd kind of hash it out.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really great question because Victoria, if you've or if any of you listeners or watchers have seen the other episode that we did with Victoria, she kind of went into a lot of really great depth about her hormones, and then she had forgotten to add this part to her question. So I thought it would be nice to just sort of talk about that. And if she's got this question, that means other people have this question too. So I'll read the question.
You always read the question.
I always read the question.
I got marbles in my mouth, so I like you reading the question.
All right. Hi again. I submitted a question about a week ago, but I have since been thinking about something that didn't occur to me and to ask the first time around. In short, if you give a perimenopausal woman progesterone in the first part of her cycle, say start her on 100 milligrams on day 6, wouldn't that dampen her estrogen production in the first part of her cycle, which would presumably be counterproductive? Or is that a relatively low dose so the estrogen production in the first half of the cycle stays pretty much the same with or without the progesterone? Thanks so much, Victoria.
Well, I think she's thought a lot about this, right? She's really trying to understand some physiology there, which I respect and encourage that. I think right off the bat, we sort of know this from a didactic or from an academic perspective, like understanding physiology and how all those hormones work. We're not going to get too much into that. Estrogen, progesterone, the presence of progesterone really does not have a direct impact on estrogen production.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of cut to the chase. There's really no one, too much of one doesn't affect the other. But she is right, though. The woman's body does not make any progesterone in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, when you're on your period, we don't make any estrogen and progesterone, or very little estrogen, no progesterone. And then once a woman hits ovulation, which isn't all the time when you're in perimenopause, if not most of the time you're not ovulating in perimenopause, is if you do ovulate, that's when you make the progesterone. So the last half of the cycle, so if someone has a 28-day cycle, they make progesterone from day 14 to 28. So that's part of it there. Are even some women have 26 day cycles, and they might make their progesterone from a little bit earlier, but usually most women make progesterone about 14 days. Some of them.
Defining thing for perimenopause, wouldn't you say that, you know, what causes perimenopause or the start of it is actually the stop of ovulation?
Yeah, or the reduction of how much progesterone is being produced from that corpus luteum that's on the ovary. So if someone does have an ovulation, there's a little spot where the egg leaves the ovary, and it's called the corpus luteum, and that's what produces the progesterone until the next, if there's no pregnancy, then until that next period. So, but you're right, in perimenopause, they may not be ovulating, hence they're not making progesterone. And then, but if somebody, let's say they're in their 30s or their 20s and they're ovulating every month, then yeah, giving somebody progesterone, like if giving a woman, and I've had this happen before too, a few times, if you're giving a woman when they're, you know, menstruating and they're ovulating and you're giving them progesterone too early in the cycle, they'll actually get a bleed sooner. That's if you give them, let's say, a 25-year-old just off a whim, you know, give them some progesterone on day 6. A lot of times they'll get their period probably about a week later.
Right. Yeah. That's why the dosing, like you wouldn't want to give, like you said, a 25-year-old, you wouldn't want to give her 100 milligrams of progesterone just on a whim. You'd want to be a little bit more gentle with that dosing because it's going to throw off her period a little bit. Progesterone is one of those things I've always said to women that, yeah, progesterone is a hormone that can either make you start bleeding or stop bleeding, depending on the situation, Right? You can't really ever tell which one it's going to do, but you would hope that you're using it. If a woman's having a heavier period, you're using some progesterone, you hope that it would sort of tone it down. If you give her, and in some ways it could actually either make it more frequent or extend it a little bit, in the same situation. So,
yeah, so part of the reasoning, and this isn't completely, is giving a woman progesterone helps offset some of the higher estrogen symptoms, or if a woman's in estrogen, has estrogen dominance, giving her progesterone can help offset some of that estrogen. The PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, or types like that, that's a little bit different when you're working with progesterone. They do really good with progesterone. They might be in their 20s. And then here I'm talking about oral progesterone. Taking oral progesterone when someone's maybe menstruating in their 20s could cause them to bleed. Now, a transdermal progesterone is a different story.
Right. What do you mean by a different story in regards to what?
In regards to how that's going to work on the body. So if you're giving somebody transdermal progesterone, I don't notice that it really has an effect on the uterine lining in somebody in perimenopause to try to lighten those periods, or even some, but it does have a really nice effect in women that are having, pretty bad PMS, in their 30s and 20s, and you're doing the transdermal, and it doesn't disrupt their periods, because that's the one thing is sometimes they can disrupt their periods when you're giving them oral progesterone.
So, and I know this has come up in a variety of ways. So, over the years, whatever. So the difference between transdermal progesterone and oral progesterone, would you say that oral progesterone is stronger than transdermal progesterone, because when you take it orally, it goes through what they call the first pass of the liver. When you swallow it, it has to go through your digestive tract, and the first place it goes is to your liver. That sort of potentizes it a little bit and makes it a little stronger. What are your thoughts about that idea?
I guess the adjective stronger is kind of I'm not really sure how to answer that. So yeah. You're right when you do take,
and I don't think stronger is the right descriptor for it. It's just because it's a completely different effect. Oral versus transdermal, it's a completely different effect. But we should know why, but I don't really know how to articulate that.
Because we do know when you do oral progesterone, it does help thin the lining of the uterus, so periods can lighten up. I don't see that with transdermal cream progesterone.
Right.
When you're giving someone oral progesterone, it can make them sleepy. Like when I took my progesterone last night, because I'm on arrhythmic dosing, I think I took 500 milligrams of progesterone because that was my dose that I needed last night. Ooh, I got real sleepy. Now, if I took that during the day, that would not be a good thing. So I take that at night. Now, if I took transdermal progesterone during the day, I give a lot of women sometimes some transdermal progesterone, and a lot of them don't get that sedating kind of tired feeling. Some women do, but most of them don't. So you see kind of a difference there. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the transdermal creams are really nice for the mood. I have seen really, and especially when you're trying to help somebody with some kind of anxiety or moodiness during the day, the transdermal creams are really nice. The one thing that we do know when you're saying stronger, when you take oral progesterone, it goes into the bloodstream and you can check the levels of the progesterone mm-hmm. into the blood, but transdermal cream works differently.
Yeah, right. You don't see as much of a blood effect from transdermal progesterone.
I think it's more in the lymphatics, right?
Yeah. It doesn't, you do a blood test before and after, and it won't, baseline won't change very much.
So it doesn't mean that's not affecting you, it's just not showing up in the blood.
Right.
I think, like I said, I think we had talked about that before, and we were talking with some pharmacists and kind of, hashing out a little bit of these hormone things, is the progesterone, when you test it in the blood, if it's transdermal cream, it's not going to show up. It's going to show very low. It doesn't mean that it's not in your system. It actually travels through the lymphatic system.
Yeah, and some of that I think is is a little bit of the testing too. But in her case, now another way that we know from experience, right? We're not even looking at physiology, just from experience, because we have given women, menstruating women of all ages, and of course postmenopausal women, those don't really count. But pretty much any woman that's getting a period. She's asking if you give progesterone in the first half of the cycle and it's going to reduce estrogen production, then you would expect that the progesterone would turn off the period, right? It would just stop it, because if you're reducing estrogen production, then you wouldn't have a period anymore. Progesterone really doesn't do that.
No, what I'm just from experience of, we worked with women with hormones for 20 years, is when I've given a woman progesterone all month long in perimenopause, maybe they stop during their period day 1 to 4, they restart on day 5. I don't notice that their estrogen levels change when I check their estrogen levels. Right. I mean, every day is a little different because you're still cycling when you're in perimenopause. So, you know, your estrogen levels on day 12 are going to be different than on day 25, are going to be different on day 7. But I don't really see too much stunting of the estrogen levels from taking the oral progesterone. Same with the transdermal, obviously. I don't see any change with the estrogen with the transdermal. But the one thing to kind of take away from this that I think is important is when someone's in perimenopause, their progesterone is low, so the estrogen becomes kind of the leader, and you can't rein in some of the negative effects of estrogen. I mean, estrogen's an amazing hormone. She's awesome. She does so many things, but can be a little bit of a runaway train with some of those symptoms like breast tenderness, like moodiness, like water weight gain, carb cravings, trouble sleeping, being irritable, but then you flash into being nostalgic and anxiety at the same time. It's, you know, there's so much that can, and even acne can pop up, and that's not really necessarily an estrogen issue, but that's because the testosterone and the DHEA, they don't have the progesterone there to kind of rein it in. Now, like you were saying, well, then if somebody's not making progesterone all month long when they're menstruating or they're cycling, how come that they're only making it that last half of the cycle? How come they don't feel terrible that first half of the cycle?
Well, because their estrogen is increasing.
Yeah, it's slowly increasing, and then the progesterone.
So now, if you really look at a woman's cycle, it is remarkable the hormonal change that happens day by day by day by day. If you really break down a 28-day cycle, eventually we're gonna do a video like this. We just don't know how to do it quite yet from all the graphics and all that kind of stuff. We got to have someone help us with that stuff. But literally from day, so, and we sort of understand this because of the rhythmic dosing that we do. We test women on rhythmic dose and we test them on day 12. Okay, day 12 is where you're typically is where the peak. And now for a menopausal woman, we're creating the peak.
When you're doing rhythmic.
When they're not having a period on their own anymore, we're giving them hormones. We are testing them on day 12 because that's where the hormonal peak is on average going to be the highest, right?
So wait, just to back up so the listeners know, when you're doing a rhythmic dosing protocol, not a static dosing.
Yeah, rhythmic. So we're intentionally trying to recreate the menstrual cycle for a woman that's 55 or 60 or 62 or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Or 52.
Or 52 in your case.
Actually 51. I'm not 52 yet.
Yeah, you're 51. At any point, right? So we are intentionally trying to recreate the period. So it happens every 26 to 28 days. So it rises. There's always a low-grade level of estrogen there, and then it rises on day 12, drops on day 13, a significant drop-off on day 13, and then there's a rise of testosterone, also LH hormone. If you ever look at the menstrual cycle pictures, there's a LH surge and then a testosterone surge on day 14, and then that drops off, and then there's progesterone. From that point on is when progesterone production goes up, and then progesterone peaks on day 21, right? So, I mean, if you think about that, you know, like there is so much going on from week to week to week to week, which is why there's, you know, women have so much trouble on the PMS side. Men, not so much. They have one hormone to worry about. There's not all this ebbing and flowing and this one's going up and this one's going down. I mean, there's a lot of potential for things to go wrong there. And I honestly think that's why we do this podcast, because as a man, understanding those things, I think it's been a little unfair to women because a lot of that just never gets talked about or taught or, you know, really discussed with women. Women have no idea what's going on with their body because no healthcare professionals ever told them what's going on with their body.
No, you're right. It's complicated. But you told me something, I want to say, maybe it was last week, that, you know, nature is perfect. It really does. Mm-hmm. It does not make mistakes. So the female, you know, cycle is pretty amazing with the estrogen coming up, and then you have ovulation, and then progesterone comes up, and progesterone the last half of the cycle actually upregulates your estrogen receptors for the first half of the cycle, which upregulate your progesterone receptors for the last half of the cycle. There's so many things going on that doing hormone replacement, we are nowhere near, like, you know, I don't even know what you would even consider. We're just, you know, kind of helping the system, but we could never truly recreate it. Feel like the rhythmic dosing is the closest you can to recreating the natural cycle, but restoring,
you know, physiologic, mm-hmm. not super physiologic, but physiologic levels of estrogen for a woman.
And that's why in this question, it's interesting because Victoria's asking, is that going to be counterproductive if you're giving progesterone all month long to the estrogen? But you can't recreate that natural cycle like I've seen with other practitioners. And I've done it myself too, where you give them, you know, estrogen all month long and then progesterone that last half. And it's all static dosing except for that last 14 days. It isn't the same finesse as changing the hormones like it is in a natural cycle. Sorry, I was just going to say one more thing.
Go ahead.
So the real take home part in this is when you give a perimenopausal female, you know, hormones from day four, the reason you don't give it when you're on your period is because you don't want to take any hormones on your period. You want that entire lining to slough off, nothing to hinder the lining of the uterus from coming out. So you always start that progesterone and, you know, on that day four and take that the whole month long until you get your next period. You're really doing that because in perimenopause, one of the hallmarks is low progesterone. And then something that we've seen in our practice is the women that only take that progesterone the last half of the cycle feel great then, but don't feel great that first half. They feel better when they're on their progesterone.
And if you only give it to them from day 14 back to their period, they come back eventually and say, can I take my progesterone all month? Because they just feel better. Or it affects their sleep. Or now some women, to Victoria's point, some women, and usually they're either just starting, they're either in PMS phase, so 20s or 30s, or they're in the early part of perimenopause. So let's say they're in their late 30s or early 40s, where they, and using her dose, she says 100 milligrams. So let's say we start them on 100 milligrams. Doesn't matter if they can start it any day of the month, right? Doesn't matter. They just start taking it. And they go through a cycle. And then they realize by the second cycle that they don't feel as good in that first half of the cycle. They feel like they just got over their period, but they feel like they're going to get their period again. Would you sort of describe, would you say that it just feels that way?
Introducing that progesterone. So sometimes you might start lower in that first half and then do a little higher in the second half, or you can start low and, you know, it's better to less is best and then work your way up. But you're right. Sometimes starting that progesterone, because in perimenopause, you're not really making a lot of progesterone. That reintroducing that, even though it's bioidentical, it looks exactly like what your own body would produce on its own. It's like your body has to get used to it. It's, you know, you might feel a little puffy and feel a little crampy. Like, where's that coming from? You might not be sleeping as great. But then, it, you know, your body gets used to it, like you're saying.
Well, like in that first 2 weeks, though, I guess my point is that the first 2 weeks when the woman's body is not actually making her own progesterone, you add some in. If the dose is too high, it can be a little bit, like she says, a little counterproductive. It can make them feel a little worse, right? Then they get to ovulation, and then they want the higher progesterone, so that's where we'll end up cycling it sometimes. So they might take 50 milligrams for the first 2 weeks, you know, like you say, right after their period today, you know, 11, 12, 13, and then bump it up to 100 milligrams, you know, as an example, from you know, day 13 or 14 all the way back to their period again. Right, because technically, to her point, she's sort of right. The progesterone does not affect the estrogen production, but the presence of the progesterone in that first 2 weeks could make a woman not feel so great.
Yeah, as her body's getting used to it, or maybe it's a little bit about the dose, like you're saying about the dose.
The dose. If you lower it, then she can tolerate it fine. And really it does come down to the dosing, whether it's, 50, 25, 50, 75, 100, you know, it doesn't matter. So, I just had a woman, a patient the other day just request if she could go from, cause she's doubling it, right? So she's going 100 to 200 and she's sort of saying that it's a little bit of too high of a dose. Now she's asking if she can go to 75 and then double it, right? So she can go from 75 to 150 because the 200 was actually a little too much. Right. So she's actually having that problem on the second half of the cycle as opposed to the first half. But, you know, she wants it all month long just to give her that support, the full 28 days or however long her cycle is.
Yeah. And one thing that we might want to just share a little bit is before we did this podcast, we talked a little bit about if this is going to reduce fertility. Now, in perimenopause, you know, fertility is already reduced. Now, never say never, but I wouldn't use taking progesterone. It's kind of like a little bit of there's a few different thoughts on that. Sometimes when we've given people progesterone, women progesterone and thyroid, they get pregnant, but that's what they were looking for. That was great. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we wanted. And then some women, they don't, because in theory, if you're giving too much progesterone all month long, for some women, it can actually suppress ovulation.
Yeah, in theory. Now, if you're using bioidentical progesterone, sustained release, but bioidentical progesterone from a compounding pharmacy versus some commercial really strong progestin, right? Now that is going to suppress ovulation. Yeah. That's going to mess up fertility, where the bioidentical progesterone is a lot gentler, not going to have nearly the same effect. So even to her question as well, taking one of those progestins in the first half could actually affect, because of what it is, it could actually affect estrogen production.
A progestin. Which is completely different than a progesterone.
Now, honestly, online, it's really frustrating because everyone tries to lump progestins into the same bucket as progesterones, and everyone needs to realize they are not the same thing. Like, they're completely alien, comparison of progestin versus progesterone. Progestins can be relatively pretty strong, and that's where all the side effects come from. The progesterone, not really, you know, there's really not too much to worry about with bioidentical progesterone.
No, and like I said, we've had lots of women that have actually, I've given them some progesterone to try to work on fertility with them. And then,
and I don't know how you, it's like you put something in the water or something, because I've never seen how many women you've helped get pregnant over the years. It's a lot.
Oh, and it's super fun.
Yeah. It's a lot.
It's neat. It's definitely, It's when they want to. It's fun.
Okay. Sorry, we had a little dead spot there. Oh, did I catch you off guard?
A little bit.
Did I make you nervous?
A little bit, no. But in any case, so back to Victoria. I like her thoughts on the physiology of this. By giving A, is that going to change B? That doesn't always work that way with the hormone. So I would say, taking the progesterone continuously, a lot of women love it. That it's not, when they're first starting it, they might feel a little uncomfortable that in that beginning part of the cycle, so you might have to actually do a lower dose and then a higher dose. But honestly, most women really love their progesterone. I mean, I love my progesterone. Most of my patients love their progesterone. It really depends on the dose, and especially if you're in perimenopause, I think you're going to really like taking your progesterone continuously, except for when you're on your period.
Yeah. Now, explain to me, because I let women take their progesterone during their period. So, what's the risk or the danger or the problem if they took it through their period? Let's say it really helps them sleep, and they don't want to stop it because this is what the feedback you get. But it helps me sleep. It helps me sleep. My sleep's no good. What if you take it during their period? What's the problem with that?
It's not that bad. I mean, it really is. And I have a few too that they really need that while they're on their period. You might do a certain dose, but it is that one thing when you think about, we're not trying to replicate nature because we can't. Nature is right. Perfect. We're right. Not.
Yeah.
But it is that theory that, you know, when you're on your period, your hormones are low. The estrogen's starting to come up, but of course, you know, the hormones are supposed to be low, so that's what causes the uterine lining to shed. The body knows there wasn't a pregnancy, there wasn't, you know, conception, so the hormones drop. And then that causes the lining to shed, and then you can start the cycle all back over. So that's kind of the theory behind it, is stop that progesterone so it doesn't make that lining thicken up.
But there's no real danger from it, you know.
No, if somebody
and started, I'm being a little tongue in cheek because I know there's not. But like I say, you get that patient, she was like, oh, but I can't sleep without it. I need my progesterone. So
and so she takes it, and then she stops having a period, even though she has a uterus, and then maybe gets this weird bleeding on day 13 or 14 or sporadic,
but that doesn't happen either.
And that's where
it could, but that doesn't, more often than not, that does not happen.
I've never seen really truly a problem with that, but it's still something nice to just kind of, you know, stop the hormones. And sometimes I have people start on day 3 or day 6, but I still have people take most people don't notice it when they stop it on their, you know, when they're on their period, they really don't. And then there's only just a few people, which I can probably count on 2 hands. That want to take it during their periods. I wouldn't say it's a bad thing. It's just something that I've sort of cultivated.
Sure, sure.
That I like to do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's fair.
Now, real quick. Now, if you don't have a uterus, we don't have to worry about it, and you can take your progesterone all month long, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now, that's one thing that we are not talking about estrogen necessarily or estrogen therapy in this one necessarily, but that's one thing that gynecologists will say is that if you don't have a uterus, you can take estrogen, but you do not need to take progesterone. What do you think of that?
For menopause. No. You, like we all know, hormones just don't affect one thing. They affect everything. So that's where if you don't take the progesterone and you're just taking estrogen, it's like almost creating an estrogen dominance, which is similar to perimenopause. Nobody wants to feel like they're in perimenopause again. And then women really do like the progesterone, and I feel like progesterone is also very breast protective.
Yeah, yeah. I think it has some additional benefits. So
brain protective. Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. It's yeah.
Our rule is always you never give a woman unopposed estrogen, right? No matter what. I mean, maybe a little bit of estriol vaginally or something because she's only doing it a few times a week, maybe. But again, if she's using it more frequently because she's having a lot of, you know, vaginal issues, then she does need some progesterone. Or if she's using it vaginally and it makes her start bleeding, right, then she needs some progesterone to offset some of that. So that's why I thought this one was interesting to do, because it just a moment just to kind of think through that physiology a little bit. And practically, like I said, bioidentical progesterone, if it was going to affect estrogen, it would just shut your period off, which we know it doesn't do. Unlike some of the progestins, that certainly could happen for sure, which we don't really prescribe those ever for any reason.
Yeah, and I wanted to, once we kind of dove into this, I'm really glad we did talk about this, because I think this is important. And Victoria is one of our, she listens to all our podcasts. She's awesome. She sent us many questions before. I certainly appreciate it. So I really wanted to reach out and, tell her I'm thank you, and also answer her question, hoping it'll help other people too.
Yeah. Lo and behold, good idea, but yes, you can take progesterone all month. And it's not counterproductive. It seems counterproductive, but it actually is more beneficial than not. And I think women out there that are actually taking progesterone, they probably would agree, right? Yeah. They would be like, oh yeah, I got to take my progesterone all month. Mm-hmm. So, anything else to add? Are we finished with Victoria's question?
I think we're good.
Okay. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.